This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 272. And we got a break from the heat. Yay. So it's beautiful outside. My throat's a little weak today. I'm trying to decide if I'm coming down with something or, heaven forbid, I'm having some kind of allergy attack, because if I am having some kind of allergy attack, it's getting about time to do a cleanse again. Several years ago, probably 15 years ago or so, I'd actually put on some extra weight. I was trying to exercise more and become a muscly man. And so I was, you know, drinking protein shakes and exercising and going through all that stuff. Anyways. And it was around that time that I ended up, I was doing music at Praise Assembly at the same time, and every week I was hacking and coughing and trying to just get through every service, and my throat was always, you know, tore up. And one of my choir members at the time came up to me and he said, "Well, it sounds like you've got allergies," because it went on for like 6 weeks. And I looked at the choir member and said, "Well, I've never had allergies." I said, "Yeah, that's the way it works. You know, you kind of have a bucket inside you, and over the years, the allergens just kind of build up and build up and build up, and eventually your body just goes, overflows, and that's an allergic response," or something like that. I can't remember the exact terminology. I do remember looking at the person and saying, "Well, I can tell you this, I'm going to find a spigot on the bottom of that bucket, because I am not living like this." So, what I thought I would try first, because God's a good designer and I believe in the way God builds things, I thought, you know, I'm just going to go clean. I'm just going to eat fresh fruits, fresh vegetables. Everything's going to be raw. No sauces, none of that junk. I'm just going to eat it like God made it. And then we'll see what happens. And I can't remember if I did meat as well. I think I probably did meat, but I can't remember for sure. Anyway, so I just, you know, cut out all of the dressings and all everything. And at that time, I was up to like 185, where I normally bounce around 170 now. So I was up to 185. I did it for a few weeks, and then I dropped to 180, 175, 170, 165. 160, 155. About the time I hit 155, I thought, okay, you probably need to start getting a little more food here. And so then I started adding back in a few things to kind of get myself stabilized. But all those allergic reaction things, gone. Done and done. And haven't had really much trouble with it since then. So I don't know if that's what it is, or I had some Chinese food last Saturday night, and if it was the Chinese food, I should pretty well be cleared out by now, which I'm not. So it's either, it's either I'm having an allergic reaction to something, or I'm trying to come down with a little cold and my body is fighting it back, and, you know, it keeps trying and I'm keeping it contained, because it's like the very, very early stages of a cold where you got a tickle in your throat, you know you're having some sinus drainage, you got a little sinus pressure, but it hasn't really flamed up. I've had, you know, sneezing a little bit
one night,
but nothing. So, who knows? If it's a cold, it'll be gone in another week or so. If it's allergies, like I said, may need to go clean. Anyways, things are puttering along. I ordered some pantaloons for my granddaughter from Artisan on Etsy. She has not finished them yet. So, I wrote her on Sunday. She was supposed to be 2 weeks, and it was 2 weeks on Sunday, so I wrote her on Sunday, and I said, "Say, I'm kind of chasing a deadline here. How's your production schedule looking?" And she wrote back and said, "Oh, I'll have them in the mail on Tuesday for you." And I was thinking at the time, okay. Tuesday has come and gone. They are not in the mail yet, as far as I know. So come Wednesday, I went ahead and ordered some more ready-made from Amazon, and they got shipped on Wednesday, which means I should have them tomorrow. And if they wander in, then I'm going to have to write Etsy merchant and say, you know what? I don't really need those anymore. So we'll see how that all works out. Kind of a big weekend. Hopefully those pantaloons come in. I take some pictures of Clara. I actually get her on the cover. I'm still working on a few details on the cover. Get her on the cover and get that finished up. Get the books ordered. Find my 40 beta readers. Get that all done by July 1st, which I've only got a couple of weeks now. So between getting the stuff delivered and yada, 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 it's going to be a little tight. And I could probably take several more editing passes through the book. But, you know, the book laid out is 360 pages. And the Word document, it's 399 pages. And I don't think I'm going through it again. I've been through it 3 times. And last time through, it was pretty good. I just think we're going to call it good. And then just see what the beta readers say. And then I got to get started on the next book. So that is all going fine. Had some really nice conversations this week with friends. They were good. So life is good. Aside from me being just a little kind of under the weather, life is good. Everything's fine. This week, several weeks ago, I had come across an article that I had bookmarked. I think I mentioned last week that I have several articles bookmarked at this point. I may be collapsing them down, so we'll see how long this all actually lasts. But I had bookmarked the article, and frankly, I didn't remember it being as good as it was. And last night, as I was preparing my notes, I was like, yeah, this is good. So, because it goes along with what I've been saying for years. And it's always good to find someone who agrees with you. That means it must be good. For those of you who are very long-term listeners of the podcast, which there aren't many of those, except maybe Darren, several years ago, I did a podcast on a guy who was building schools in Pakistan. He was building schools in Pakistan, but as it turned out, he had embellished his own story about building those schools in Pakistan, which is kind of a shame. But he was actually considered for, I think, a Nobel Peace Prize at one point. And in the building of these schools in Pakistan, if I recall correctly, he was really emphasizing the education of girls. And at that time, I had talked about the fact that it's a shame that we decided with Iraq and Iran that what we would do is go over and bomb people, as opposed to look at the underlying sociological causes for terrorism and those types of things, and how we might be revolutionary in our thinking and come up with a different approach that would have a great impact on that region. And in reading this article that I'd like to talk about today, it really comes at this the same way. because I think what the person who wrote the article, wrote the opinion piece, I think they're absolutely right that there is another option for us besides sending military overseas and having them kill a bunch of people and break things. But there is another option. So anyways, the name of the opinion piece was "What's So Scary About Smart Girls?" And this is by Nicholas Kristof from a couple of weeks ago, May 10th, 2014. I think it was New York Times. And he notes that when terrorists in Nigeria organized a secret attack in April, they didn't target army barracks or police departments or a drone base. No, the Boko Haram militants attacked what is even scarier to a fanatic, a girls' school. They attacked educated girls who, according to the author of this article, are their worst nightmare. So that kind of got me interested. What's so scary about smart girls? And he goes on to say, why are fanatics so terrified of girls' education? He said, because there's no force more powerful to transform a society. The greatest threat to extremism isn't drones firing missiles, but girls reading books. Okay, that's pretty interesting. Because he claims that if you want to mire a nation in backwardness, you manacle their daughters. And he was saying that, in fact, Boko Haram, is that their name? They were being quite rational, even in a barbaric way, about how they wanted to go about maintaining control. Because they recognized that if you educate girls, there is a ripple effect from that. And what the opinion columnist said was that it saddens him that the West isn't acting as rationally. He says, to fight militancy, we overwhelmingly invest in a military toolbox, but not so much in the education toolbox that has a far better record at defeating militancy. In other words, if someone comes after you with a gun, there might be a better way to go at this than shooting back, getting out your own gun. He mentions President Obama, who gave the green light to blow up terrorists with drones, but he neglected his 2008 campaign promise to establish a $2 billion fund for education. And he says he wishes the Republicans, instead of investigating him for scandals, I've seen the word before, there's a word here, chimerical, C-H-I-M-E-R-I-C-A-L, chimerical scandals in Libya, he wishes they would have shone a light on his failure to follow through on this great idea. So, then he goes on and he says, okay, so why does educating girls, why is that so important? And he says it changes demography. I'm sorry, I'm not quite on my mark today. Because I just got this little pressure in my head. It changes the demography. Yeah, demography, right. Okay, good. We got that word out. He was saying that the primary cause of instability, or one of the most strongly correlated causes of instability, is a youth bulge in the population. He said, the more unemployed men you have, ages 15 to 24, the more upheaval. He said, one study found that for every 1 percentage point increase in the share of population, age 15 to 24, the risk of civil war increases by 4 percentage points. things. That means curbing birth rates tends to lead to stability. He said, and that's where education comes in. He said, if you educate a boy, he'll have fewer children, but it's a small effect. He said, you educate a girl, and on average, she will have a significantly smaller family. He said, one study found that for each additional year of primary school, a child has 0.26 fewer children. So if you want to reduce the youth bulge a decade from now, you educate girls today. Which is interesting, because underneath the surface, what might be playing out is a very simple survival response. If a girl doesn't have an education, what hope does she have of being taken care of having, being able to survive, of being able to have a better chance of having an adequate life? Well, in the Philippines, they didn't have any kind of social security thing, and so their plan was, let's have lots of children so that when we're in our old age, some of them at least will survive and they can take care of us. Whereas if you educate a woman, this isn't in the article, this is just my supposing. Whereas if you educate a woman and she feels like she has some skills in the workforce and has some way of making some money with her own skills, she is less likely to have that many children because she'll feel confident that she can make her way in the world. Anyways, getting back to the article, he says, more broadly, girls' education can, in effect, almost double the formal labor force. It boosts the economy, raising living standards and promoting a virtuous cycle of development. Asia's economic boom was built by educating girls and moving them from the villages to far more productive work in the cities. And then he gives Bangladesh as an example. He says, after Bangladesh gained independence, it emphasized education, including education of girls, and today it actually has more girls in high school than boys. These educated women have become the backbone of Grameen Bank, development organizations like BRAC, and the garment industry. He said, Oman is another example. He says, there was a coup, and the government decided that they would educate boys and girls alike. He said, today, Oman is stable and incomparably better off than its neighbor, Yemen, where girls are still married off young and often denied an education. He said, America is fighting Al-Qaeda affiliates in Yemen and Pakistan with drones. Maybe we should be investing in girls' schools as Bangladesh and Oman did. And I, to that, say a hearty yes. Now, the author goes on to say, okay, it's no silver bullet, because if you educate girls, but you still keep them, you know, under your thumb like they do in Saudi Arabia, you don't empower them, then you don't get this benefit. You really have to educate and unleash women. Because once you do that, he says, these women often become force multipliers for good. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Just going to check down below just in case to see if the pantaloons came today. No. Oh, Etsy. Okay. So, and then he gives an example of Angeline Mugwenderi, was an impoverished Zimbabwean girl who was mocked by her classmates because she traipsed to school barefoot in a torn dress with nothing underneath. She couldn't afford school supplies, so she would wash dishes for her teachers in hopes of being given a paper or pen in thanks. And yet, she was brilliant. In the nationwide sixth grade graduation exam, she had the highest score in her entire district, indeed one of the highest scores in the country. Yet she had no hope of attending seventh grade because she couldn't afford the fees. That's when a nonprofit called the Campaign for Female Education, or CAMFED, came along and helped and paid for Angeline to stay in school. Backing into my garage. So she stays in school. She does really well. And in fact, now she's a regional director for the same nonprofit. And she's in charge of helping impoverished girls get to school in four African countries. So in other words, she's paying it forward. Because that helped her. And so now she's going out and she is helping others. And this is where he started in the article kind of coming down to it. He had mentioned it previously, but this is where he really started coming down to it, and I couldn't agree more. He says, we spend billions of dollars on interventions, and even though they have quite a mixed record, by comparison, educating girls is an underfunded cause, even though it's more straightforward. He said, readers often feel helpless, unable to make a difference, but it was a grassroots movement starting in Nigeria that grabbed attention and held leaders accountable to address it. Nigeria's leaders perhaps now realize they must protect not only oil wells, but an even greater treasure, the students, the nation's students. He goes on to say that a $40 gift at camfed.org, C-A-M-F-E-D.org, buys a uniform so that a girl can go to school. He said, we can also notify our members of Congress, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the point of all this, to me, is, and we should be supporting causes like that, and that's good. That's not the main point I wanted to make, though. The point of this is that oftentimes we are told that there's only one solution, that when someone raises a fist at us, we should raise a fist back. And yet, here is something where we could treat others as we wish to be treated, where instead of raising a fist back, we could say, you know what? They really need more educated girls over there. So why don't we say, you know, look, that terrorist attack, 2001, September 11th, we let our guard down. We're going to do better. We're not going to let that kind of thing happen again. And what we're going to do is we're going to go over to Afghanistan and maybe fund some nonprofit organizations to go in, and we're going to build some schools. We're going to improve your roads. We're going to do some things to help you get your country, you know, off the ground. We're going to show you that we don't play favorites over here, that we're going to help as many countries as we can, because I think I can pretty much guarantee it would cost less, and it would probably be more effective to educate people than it would be to take guns over there and kill them and send drones over there and fire missiles at them. You know, it's just, to me, it's just a little wrong-headed. Not that I don't appreciate our military and their bravery and their good service that they do to our country. I'm not by any means dumping on the military, because they pretty much just have to do what they're told. But from a political standpoint, it just seems to me to make far more sense to follow some principles that Jesus laid out thousands of years ago than to decide, well, that just won't work, and someone shot at us, so we just have to go shoot at somebody else. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.